right, here in the third hour of the program, some very interesting audio coming from the 22nd. That was Sunday, if I'm not mistaken. It was billed as a candlelight vigil there in Washington, D.C. Of course, that is at the very first day of this week, the week in which the Senate Judicial Committee was going to be considering whether they were going to pass out on Samuel Alito for the Supreme Court nomination. And then, of course, now the Senate itself as the full body considering that. In advance of all of that, one day before the 33rd anniversary of Roe v. Wade, pro-choice leaders gathering in Washington, D.C., candles lit, signs out, microphone in hand, and they all had something to say. We're going to be playing it for you here in the course of the third hour of Issues, Etc. Welcome back. I'm Todd Wilkin, and I'd like your thoughts on it as well. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. I don't know, 8, 9 speakers in the course of this candlelight vigil. Lasts only about a half hour. We did have to, just for the sake of honesty, we did have to edit out two pieces. One, C-SPAN's audio simply died for about a minute in the middle of one of the addresses, so we had to edit that to make it sound coherent. And then there was another section here in which one of the speakers, Olga Vives, speaks in Spanish for about a minute and a half, and we did edit that out given the fact that probably a large portion of our audience is not going to be speaking Spanish. She simply repeated her English comments. Very interesting things said. A variety of things were said. One theme sounding throughout the entire pro-choice rally: they didn't want Judge Alito confirmed for the Supreme Court. And the other theme was, they're not going back. Now listen, at the very end of this audio, it'll come probably on the other side of the break as we get to it. Listen at the very end for the final comments made by Kim Gandy, president of the National Organization for Women. I don't know how big the gathering was. C-SPAN's camera kind of kept a tight angle on the main speakers. From the sound of the crowd, could be dozens, could be 100, I don't know. There were pro-life protesters there as well. And you only hear them at the very, very end and very softly saying a few things as the vigil is breaking up. We're going to be playing the audio for you. I'm going to be stopping and starting it with my own comments. I'd like to hear from you. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. This was last Sunday, the 22nd of January, the day before the 33rd anniversary of Roe v. Wade. This is the National Organization for Women's Pro-Choice Candlelight Vigil. Pause here for just a moment. That was, of course, Latifah Lyle. She's membership vice president for the National Organization for Women. She's kind of the moderator of this whole thing. She's the one who introduces everyone. They're standing on the steps, I believe, of the U.S. Supreme Court. It might have been of the House. It was hard to tell because the angle was so tight. They're in Washington, D.C. Now, she's made the point early on. I think it's the theme they were trying to strike. And if you don't watch the video, you might not catch the juxtaposition of the image with the statement. She starts out by talking about all the young women in America who fear their reproductive rights, and there's a bit of code you might want to listen for again and again and again in the comments made at the National Organization for Women's Pro-Choice Candlelight Vigil last Sunday. Reproductive rights. She tries to make the point that there are young women all over the country who are concerned about having their rights for reproduction taken away from them. Now, while there were, according to the eye of the camera, some young women there, the speakers, I think she's probably the youngest. I'm going to take a fair guess. Probably the youngest. She says she's 30. So that makes her younger than Roe v. Wade. She's probably the youngest that spoke. The rest of them, not young women. I'm not saying that they were ancient, but not young women. Now, the message they're trying to send is this is a women's movement, this is a civil rights movement, and this is a movement that young people are concerned about. Yet the leaders of the movement are not young women. That generation that has lived for 33 years with Roe v. Wade. The Roe generation. The generation that, let's just be honest about it, has survived Roe v. Wade. They are here today, these women, under 33 years old, they are here today because their mothers didn't avail themselves of the so-called right, reproductive rights of Roe v. Wade. Do they really come out in droves in favor of keeping Roe v. Wade on the books? Not necessarily. Now, we're going to hear a lot about what the American women wanted, the American public wanted, and overwhelming majorities. I suggest you check that out as to whether or not the majority of Americans really do want what the National Organization for Women is calling for here. Now, I'll admit, the majority of Americans do want abortion to be legal. That's a sad fact, but it's true. Do they want, as we will hear in just a few minutes, legal abortion with no restrictions? That's what these women are calling for. That's what these pro-choice vigil holders are calling for. That is not necessarily true. So back to the National Organization for Women's Pro-Choice Candlelight Vigil in the middle of their chants, not going back. First from Latifah Lyles, membership vice president for NOW, and on to another speaker.
And now I want to introduce to you our first speaker, Terry O'Neill, who is the executive director of the National Council of Women's Organizations. Thank you, Latifah, and thank you to NOW for organizing this candlelight vigil. It is always an inspiration. The National Council of Women's Organizations, with over 200 groups around the country, encompassing some 10 million women around the country, represents the organized women's movement. You may see individual women objecting to reproductive rights, but our member organizations know exactly how important it is for women, no matter what their economic circumstances, to be able to have access to the full range of reproductive health services. Our organizations know, like everyone assembled here knows, that if Roe versus Wade were to be overturned, it would mean going back to the days of illegal, unsafe abortions like we had in the 20th century and even the 19th century, and we have no intention of going back to those dark days.
Okay, just a clarification. I would go so far as to say a correction. That's not true. The overturning of Roe v. Wade would not mean, this is just a legal fact, folks. The overturning of Roe v. Wade would not mean going back to all abortions being illegal. Far from it. It would not mean going back to the back alley days of cloak and dagger sneaking around to get an abortion. It wouldn't. I think it's a pretty fair guess that my home state, my adopted home state, Illinois, would continue to have legal abortions with as little restrictions as they have now, even if Roe v. Wade were overturned. Because if Roe v. Wade is overturned, it becomes a state-by-state issue for each individual state in the United States to decide for themselves. Now, some states might become more restrictive. Some states might even outlaw. I'd say Mississippi is a safe bet, if Roe v. Wade were overturned, to outlaw abortion altogether in the state of Mississippi. But to say that we would go back to illegal abortions nationwide is simply not true. We would go back to some states being less restrictive on abortion, some states like Missouri perhaps being more restrictive, and some states like Mississippi outlawing it altogether. if this is something that pro-lifers need to be aware of as much as pro-choicers, pro-lifers need to be aware of the fact that if Roe v. Wade is overturned, that does not end legal abortion in the U.S. Not by any stretch of the imagination. So with that correction,
Supreme Court's decision in Roe v. Wade, we take a moment to remember women like Rosie Jimenez, like Becky Bell, like Pauline Shirley, women who lost their lives because they didn't have access to a safe, legal means of ending their pregnancies. Now, Samuel Alito, the man nominated to replace Justice Sandra Day O'Connor on the Supreme Court, has openly advocated overturning Roe v. Wade. He is so far out of the mainstream that he has advocated restrictions on birth control. He has called some forms of birth control abortifacients, which means that they could be subject to the same limitations as are placed on abortion.
Now, it's not just Samuel Alito who has called some forms of birth control. You know, the real trick here is, what do you call birth control? If you consider abortion to be birth control, well, yes, of course. But it's not just Samuel Alito who's called some forms of so-called birth control abortifacients. So have the manufacturers of the drugs. Read the literature. You know that reams and reams of little thin paper that you get written in microscopic text when you buy anything by prescription? Well, even the manufacturers of the morning after pill, Plan B, RU486, which some people would consider birth control, and certain kinds of regular, not over-the-counter, but by prescription contraceptives, can be, and in some cases are, abortifacients. They cause an abortion. They may not be designed to do that by those who manufacture them, but they will admit, even the manufacturers will admit, yes, they're abortifacients in certain cases. So it's not just Samuel Alito who's saying this. And it's not a matter of opinion, it's a matter of fact.
That is the rhetoric of extremist right-wing activists, not an even-handed, open-minded jurist. If you read Alito's record, you will find many reasons to decide that he's not the person to replace Sandra Day O'Connor, but take a look at what you won't find in his record. What you won't find is any indication that he understands or cares about the everyday struggles of women whose reproductive rights are on the line. No indication that he understands or cares about teenage girls who are victims of incest or rape and who need an abortion or even emergency contraception. No indication that he cares or understands about the woman with heart disease or some other illness who needs an abortion to protect her own health. No indication that he cares or understands the woman whose birth control has failed and who simply needs to make her own decision, together with the people who love her best, whether she will continue or terminate that pregnancy.
All right. Now, there may be, in fact, people who love this girl best. Here is a great example. This is kind of the typical poster child of the pro-choice side. The hypothetical woman who has all these circumstances impending upon her. Her birth control failed. Perhaps she was raped, victim of incest. Now, those things certainly do happen, okay? And she just wants to make a choice. It's an innocent thing. She just wants to make a choice. Now, is that the typical person who walks into an abortion clinic? Not from what we've discovered on this program. The typical woman who walks into an abortion clinic is terrified. Not because she's thinking, oh, this baby's going to destroy my life. She's terrified because her husband, her mother, in many cases, is pressuring her to have an abortion. Olivia Gantz has been a guest on this program. She's told the story of her abortion. And she said her doctor, her boyfriend, her parents, everyone told her she was stupid if she didn't have it. Now, she's directing these things at Samuel Alito. He simply doesn't care about these women. That's a theme that you'll also be wanting to listen for here. is it goes from Samuel Alito not caring about women to all pro-choicers not caring about women. And then finally, near the end, we'll get one of the speakers at the National Organization for Women's Pro-Choice Candlelight Vigil last Sunday just saying that pro-choicers just hate everybody. That's the real problem. They just hate everybody. They're just evil. I got two emails while I was gone from a listener who made the same kind of accusations. Doesn't like the fact that I talk about abortion. Thinks I'm shaming my church body by talking about abortion. He might want to check into what our church body, the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, actually teaches about abortion. But thinks I'm shaming our church body by talking about abortion. And he thinks I'm a Nazi. Sent me a picture of what he called his fundamentalist belt buckle with the Nazi eagle and swastika on it. He thought I would like it. I didn't, but now it's very easy to make those kind of accusations and simply say I can dismiss the pro-choice, I mean the pro-life position, because they don't care. Or they're bad people. Or they're twisted, or they're crazy, or something like that. Now, as you listen here to the pro-choice side, don't do the same thing. Don't say, well, these women are crazy, or these pro-choicers are evil. That may or may not be true. I don't know. The issue here is, are they right? The only issue is, are they right? Do they make arguments that coincide with the facts? So let's listen some more.
Alito just doesn't seem to understand that it's not his decision, it's the woman's decision to make. The president who nominated this man to succeed Sandra Day O'Connor just chose to put political expediency and ideology ahead of the rights and welfare of the women of this country, and now it's up to the United States Senate. This is the senator's one moment to stand up for principle and to do what's right. We call on all of the senators, do your duty. Keep Samuel Alito off the Supreme Court, because women will never go back. We will fight back. Thank you. Thank you, Terry.
Our call in number is 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Feel free to chime in here. We're listening to some C-SPAN audio from Sunday, last Sunday's Candlelight Vigil of the National Organization for Women's Pro-Choice Vigil in Washington, D.C., celebrating, it sounds like they're celebrating, although they don't seem too happy, about 33 years of Roe v. Wade. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. That first of their speakers was Terry O'Neill. She's executive director of the National Council of Women's Organizations. Up next, Lorraine Cole, president of the Black Women's Health Imperative.
Thank you, Terry. Our next speaker is Lorraine Cole, president of the Black Women's Health Imperative. Thank you. For nearly 25 years, the Black Women's Health Imperative has been at the forefront of promoting optimum health for the nation's 19 million black women and girls. We recently changed our name from the Black Women's Health Project to the Black Women's Health Imperative to stress a sense of urgency and outrage about the deplorable health status of black women. For instance, for many black women, limited contraceptive options and out-of-pocket costs for contraceptives have led to delayed contraceptive use or use of less effective methods. This contributes to the higher number of unintended pregnancies among black women and the decision to seek abortion in many cases. Therefore, make no mistake about it, black women have the greatest stake in policies affecting the availability of safe abortions. If the legal right to abortion is reversed, black women would bear the greatest burdens of a return to back alley practices. The morning after President Bush laid a wreath to honor Rosa Parks, he contradicted that gesture by announcing Judge Samuel Alito as his nominee to the Supreme Court. Alito's views are antithetical to the values and freedoms for which Rosa Parks sat. Alito's personal positions and judicial records show he is hostile to civil rights. He is hostile toward individual privacy, and he is also hostile toward the rights of women to reproductive health, safety, and autonomy. Alito is outside of the mainstream thinking on these issues.
That's right.
If Alito replaces Sandra Day O'Connor, it will be the biggest ideological shift on the Supreme Court since Clarence Thomas replaced Justice Thurgood Marshall. If Alito is confirmed by the Senate next week, Roe v. Wade could be on the fast track to being overturned. The Supreme Court must remain fair, balanced, and without a political or partisan agenda. That is an imperative. Decisions about childbearing must remain private matters between a woman and her doctor, not a woman and government officials. That is an imperative.
Today. All right, just going to pause here because we're getting ready to go to a break. Feel free to join us, 505-7850-1800-730-2727. There's a little bit more there from Lorraine Cole, the president of the Black Women's Health Imperative, and we'll get to that in just a moment. In fact, maybe before we go to our break, a lot of this is intended to speak to the Alito nomination. A lot of this was intended to speak to those who were actually going to vote on the Alito nomination in the Senate. Pretty dire picture of that nomination being made there. But one thing you ought to note here, and that is, and this will come up again with other speakers at the National Organization for Women's Candlelight Vigil on Sunday, the connection between civil rights and what they would call reproductive rights. The two are going to be woven together. Already Rosa Parks has been mentioned. As far as I know, Rosa Parks was not sitting there in the front of the Montgomery bus. I don't think she was sitting in for abortion rights. Now, she was sitting in for civil rights. And while one might, I'd be happy to listen to an argument that somehow abortion rights and civil rights are woven of the same cloth, that's not what's going to happen here. If you'll listen carefully as we move on through this audio from C-SPAN, it's simply going to be asserted that the two are the same. No arguments are going to be made. And then it's going to be further asserted that those who oppose reproductive rights, or let's just say it plainly, a free abortion without restriction, also oppose civil rights. If you're opposed to one, you would necessarily be opposed to the other. Now, that's simply not true. Now, if you want to make an argument that the two are the same thing or the two are woven of the same cloth, go ahead. But here, arguments are not made. They're simply asserted that, well, if you're opposed to abortion, you're going to be opposed to civil rights. You'd rather go back to slavery. One of them will say that much, in effect. When we come back, more of this audio and your reactions as well. Open lines, issues, etc. Stay tuned.
Defending the faith, teaching the truth. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
People think of C.S. Lewis as the author of the Chronicles of Narnia, or the author of Mere Christianity, or Surprised by Joy, or any of his other books. But C.S. Lewis was an educator. What did C.S. Lewis, perhaps the most influential Christian apologist in the 20th century, have to say about his chosen vocation? Our Issues, Etc. book of the month for January is called Irrigating Deserts, C.S. Lewis on Education. For more information about Irrigating Deserts, go to our website, issuesetc.org. You'll find the book on the homepage. Or you can order Irrigating Deserts for $22.99 from Concordia Publishing House. Call them toll-free, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040. It's the Issues Etc. book of the month for January, Irrigating Deserts.
Sea cucumbers, they actually turn inside out.
Answers with Ken Ham, who's helping to design and build a major creation museum near Cincinnati, Ohio. Well, Ken, this does sound interesting. An animal that turns itself inside out? How in the world?
Well, as strange as it sounds, it's certainly true. We've even had photos of this in Creation magazine. You see, when a sea cucumber feels threatened, it actually turns itself inside out, exposing all of its internal organs. Then the predator feeds on those organs and swims away. Now you'd think, well, that'd be the end of the sea cucumber. But it isn't. After all its organs are gone, the sea cucumber turns right side out and kind of shrinks up into a small blob. Then it begins to regenerate all of the organs that were eaten away by the predator until it becomes a fully functional sea cucumber again. Here's a question for evolutionists. How many sea cucumbers died trying to learn how to turn inside out and have their organs eaten away and then grow new ones? Mark, the sea cucumber is a marvelous testimony of God's unique creative powers. As with the rest of the creatures of the ocean, the question of the origin of the sea cucumber, well, it's answered in God's Word, beginning with Genesis.
What does God's Word say about the true age of the earth? It's one of the major topics of our new booklet, just posted to our website this month. Go to our site, AnswersRadio.com, and read that free booklet. AnswersRadio.com.
Dr. Carl Fakencher on the Center of Seminary Life at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Certainly, we would begin by expressing our strong commitment to the Scriptures and the Lutheran Confessions. Everything that we do here is gathered around God's Word, whether that is a matter of our daily worship in the chapel or the prayer life that is a part of our activity together. The classes themselves are always focused on proclaiming Christ as well. I think another very important aspect of our seminary that makes us unique is the relationship between the faculty and the students. And of course, always it's based on our shared faith in Christ Jesus.
For more information about Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, or to schedule an on-campus visit, call 1-800-481-2155. 1-800-481-2155.
Here's a message from our Church of the Week. Our Redeemer Lutheran Church, 9135 Shelley Avenue in Overland, has been making disciples of Jesus by sharing Christ's love for more than 93 years. Led by Pastors Rodney Wise and Benjamin Schroeder, our Redeemer celebrates the Divine Service every Sunday at 8 and 10:30 a.m. and every Monday at 6:30 p.m. Their number, 314-427-3444. Our Redeemer Lutheran Church and School, making disciples by sharing Christ's love with one another, the community, and the world.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkham. We're coming to you live this Thursday. It is the 26th of January. We're listening to some C-SPAN audio from the National Organization for Women's Pro-Choice Candlelight Vigil on Sunday, the day before the 33rd anniversary of the Supreme Court's decision, Roe v. Wade. Our call-in number is 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. We're hearing from Lorraine Cole. She's the president of Black Women's Health Imperative. We'll finish up her comments, and then we're going to jump down for time's sake, to Eleanor Smeal. He'll from her. She's the president of the Feminist Majority Foundation. Jatris Martel-Gator, she has some very interesting things to say, and we'll finish off with Kim Gandy, president of the National Organization for Women. First, let's talk with Bob, who calls from his car. Bob, welcome to Issues Etc. Hey, Bob. Are you there, Bob? All right, Bob is gone. We'll get, if he wants to call back, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Picking up where we left off, this is Lorraine Cole, president of the Black Women's Health Imperative, speaking at NOW's Pro-Choice Candlelight Vigil on Sunday.
Today must not be the last anniversary of Roe v. Wade. That is an imperative. What do we want? Justice! When do we want it? What do we want?
Justice!
When do we want it?
Now!
Okay, our next speaker is Eleanor Smeal, president of the Feminist Majority Foundation. We're at a pivotal moment in history. We are here to defend a woman's right to make her decisions without the interference of government. We're here to defend women's rights, and we will be here year in, year out. We're not going back. This week, we must call. We
in the world are watching, and we cannot go backwards. Women just marched in Milan. A woman who's a feminist just became the president of Chile. A woman has become the president of Liberia. We who helped to create a worldwide women's movement are not going to sit here while our country tries to stack the Supreme Court to deny a woman's right to fundamental health and liberty. But it goes further than that. This appointment has decided against us on sexual harassment. He has decided against us on whether women can have a right to jury trials with sex discrimination cases. He has narrowly interpreted the Family Medical Leave Act. He has voted to narrowly interpret the rights of workers. This appointment would drive back civil rights, women's rights, workers' rights, and the protection of the environment. This is no time to go backwards. This is the 21st century, and we intend it to be a century of equality and justice. We believe right now we are on a roll. There is a momentum. One senator after another is saying no to Alito. Let them hear our voices. Done. So many times people have counted out the civil rights movement. So many times they have said we couldn't go forward on women's rights. So many times workers have come up to seemingly overwhelming opposition. We need 41 determined senators, and we believe we can get 41 determined senators. Please do everything this week to make sure senators vote no and stop Alito. There might be a battle of signs right here, but we know the vast majority of Americans have said over and over and over again in public opinion polling they want women's right to choose to remain legal in all 50 states. And overwhelmingly, our country has said over and over and over again that we want to stand for equal rights for women. We want to stand for civil rights for all. We can't go back. Vote no on Alito. Block him with a filibuster if needed.
All right, that's Eleanor Schmiel. She's president of the Feminist Majority Foundation. She's a mainstay of pro-choice rallies. She really is. She's one of the elder statesmen of the pro-choice movement. There's no doubt about in the feminist movement. What I'm wondering when I listen to her, at least to the comments she was initially making, is, look, you're there about Roe. Okay, fine. You're there to see that Roe isn't overturned. And in that connection, they're there to voice their opposition to Samuel Alito as the president's nominee to take over as associate justice in the U.S. Supreme Court. Fine. Stay on subject. She's talking about a woman being elected the president of Spain, and she's all over the globe, literally all over the globe. Others are talking about civil rights. Look, if you are there to talk about abortion and its real need, you shouldn't have to bring in all the... If abortion is a good for society, for women... A self-evident good, which is what the pro-choice movement had been arguing for so many years, that abortion, the right to have abortion without restriction, legal and free and without any kind of restriction on you, is a self-evident good and a fundamental human right. Why do you have to connect all these other things to it? You should not have to bolster your argument if it is a self-evident good and fundamental human right. And really, you shouldn't even have to cite public opinion polls. What the public believes about it is irrelevant if it is right. What the public thinks about it is irrelevant. If it is a self-evident good. Now, you will note, not from these voices so much, because these are the old guard of the pro-choice movement, but the new guard of the pro-choice movement, they will no longer push the point so hard that abortion is good. They'll say it's a necessary evil. Now, they won't come out and say necessary evil. What they'll say is safe, legal, and rare. Well, why, if it's good, if it's a good thing for women, should it be rare? If it's a good thing for women, and exercising this fundamental human right is a self-evident good, why would you ever want it to be rare? Ever. I wouldn't think that you would. All right, next up, and we're going to be skipping one speaker here for the sake of time. We're skipping Olga Vives, who's the executive vice president of NOW. On to Jatris Martel-Gator. She's the president of Planned Parenthood of Metropolitan Washington, D.C. Listen carefully.
Our next speaker is Jatris Martel-Gator, president of the Metro Washington Planned Parenthood.
At Planned Parenthood here in Washington, D.C. and Maryland and Virginia, we stay open 6 days a week to provide compassion, care, and health care to women who are uninsured, underinsured, young, and poor. We provide services to protect their health. That decision is between the woman, her doctor, her church, her God, her family, not the Supreme Court. Not the state court, not the state legislature, not anybody but that woman. This is about control. Women should control their health care decisions. Women should control their body. The men who don't give any money to increase family planning in the legislature. The men and women who don't vote for daycare, prenatal care, drug abuse support and rehab for mothers who are totally indifferent to children. These are people who claim they love the unborn and they love the fetus, but they are indifferent and they hate and they're racist and they're mean and they hurt women and children. Stop them! Stop them now! Stop them!
All right. Look, it really... The temptation here, of course, is to respond in kind, isn't it? Or simply to mock this. But we shouldn't. I will respond objectively. I might be the most evil person in the world. Pro-lifers might be as evil as she says they are. They might not care anything about anybody. They might, in fact, hate women. Really hate babies. And hate every racial minority there is. All accusations she's leveled there. It doesn't matter. That's irrelevant. It really shouldn't matter how evil pro-lifers are. If your position as a pro-choicer is solid, if abortion is a self-evident good and a fundamental human right, why would you need to resort to arguments about how evil the opposition is? It shouldn't matter. If what you are calling for is good and should be done, you should not have to resort to arguments about how evil us pro-lifers are. I mean, we might in fact be evil. Now, someone can be evil and right. Someone can be well-intentioned and wrong. But it's just a bit of what you might have heard had you been standing on the steps there in Washington as part of the National Organization for Women's Pro-Choice Candlelight Vigil on Sunday. Celebrating. They don't sound happy, do they? It didn't sound very celebratory, the 33rd anniversary of Roe v. Wade. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. So that was Jatris Martel-Gator, president of Planned Parenthood's Metropolitan Washington, D.C. I'm not sure if there's more. Let's just pick it up where we left off and see exactly if she's done there. I can't remember if she's done. She was finished. Now, feel free to join us. We've only got a few minutes here, about 10 more minutes during open lines, issues, etc. We're coming to you live this Thursday. It's the 26th of January, listening to C-SPAN's audio of the National Organization for Women's Pro-Choice Candlelight Vigil. Now, you might not have seen any of this on television. They might have had a snippet here or there on the radio, but C-SPAN carried the entire thing from beginning to end. We're trying to carry as much of it as we possibly can for you and get your reaction as well. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Here's Bob. He's calling from his car. Bob, welcome to Issues Etc.
Well, hi, Pastor Todd. Boy, this is, you know, this is one of these things that just let them talk. And it speaks so much for itself that it's very revealing. And but that last speaker, she started out nice and calm and ended up shouting. My response to after when she was done was to say, Zieg Heil.
Well, yes, and I understand that, Bob. Thank you very much. It is very tempting. Now, it might simply be passion. I think there's quite a bit of anger at work there as well. But I got to ask, what is the pro-choice community angry about? Alito is not going to shift the court. Just do the math. He's not going to shift the court on Roe. We need one, at least the pro-life community needs at least one more justice who would be willing to overturn Roe v. Wade. And it is far from a foregone conclusion that Alito is willing to overturn Roe v. Wade. Now, there might be that might seem to be the way it is now, but how many times have there been Supreme Court justices during the nomination process who have said one thing and then went on the court, done another? Sandra Day O'Connor, the woman that he is replacing, said flat out during her nomination process that she is opposed to abortion. And she has been, even by the pro-choicer standard, one of the staunchest voices, the deciding vote in many cases. Against restriction on abortion, I think the only issue where she sided with the pro-choicers on the court was the banning of partial birth abortion. So you never know. Now, people often accuse pro-lifers of being just radical, dangerous people. Listen. Listen to what we've just heard. Who are you really more afraid of? There are pro-lifers at this vigil, by the way. They're mentioned several times in the comments. You don't hear them. But I got to ask again, Roe is still on the books. Why are they so angry? I could understand this reaction if Roe had just been overturned. I would understand it. Disagree with it, but understand it. But it's still on the books. Seems a little premature. Finally, here's Kim Gandy. She's president of the National Organization for Women. She's the final speaker at their pro-choice candlelight vigil on Sunday.
Thank you, Latifah. We stand here for the 33rd time, marking the anniversary of the decision that changed women's lives. I grew up in a small town in North Louisiana where girls who got pregnant in high school were sent away. Many of them never returned. We didn't know what happened to them. They were sent away and their lives were changed forever because they did not have choices. The very same people who would deny women the right to make their most personal and private decisions in private are the very same people you see around us here who can't bear even to let us speak in private.
Just by the way, just for the sake of clarity here, I'm actually playing their comments. I disagree with them profoundly. If I didn't want you to hear them, if I didn't want them to have a right to say in public or in private what they're saying, I wouldn't be playing it. But I'm playing it. I agree with Bob, the caller before. Let's just let them have their say. Let's just let them have their say. This is, at least for one, this is one pro-lifer who has no problem with letting them speak in public. In fact, I think more of these things what might be helpful for the pro-life cause. What do you think? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Before we go back to Kim Gandy, let's hear from Jason, who calls from his car. Hi, Jason.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. You were trying to appeal to maybe a pro-lifer, I mean, a pro-choice that's listening person's view and saying that that if abortion rights are a self-evident good, then they should just stand alone and they don't have to appeal to polls. And I just was going to say that maybe you're just trying to uncover this and point this out, but I'm thinking that people don't really have that bearing on an objective right and wrong, and so that's why they appeal to the polls.
So let me see if I've got you straight here, Jason. Because the question of right or wrong really isn't even on the radar.
Mm-hmm.
It does become an issue of public opinion. Is that what you're saying?
That's what I'm saying, and maybe the people that are arguing or the speaker doesn't realize it, but on one hand, they begin to argue as if it is the self-evident good, but then on the other hand, they argue that it's a public opinion thing, and I don't think they even realize that they're arguing from both sides.
I think you're right, Jason. Thank you very much for pointing that out. You know, if I were pro-choice, which I'm not, but if I were pro-choice, I'd say it doesn't make any difference what the American public believes or what they say in response to polls. Irrelevant. Abortion is a fundamental right, should not be denied anyone, and it's a self-evident good. And those who don't recognize it, those who do not recognize that it's a self-evident good, I wouldn't say they're evil. If I were pro-choice, I'd say they're just profoundly wrong. And wrong in so many ways. And there'd be no need to appeal to it. It's if we were talking about something, another, say, fundamental right, free speech. Taken in its plainest sense, not yelling fire in a crowded theater, but free speech. Freedom of the press. Do you see people going out and doing polls? Do you think the press should really be free? Do you think the press should be able to print what it wants to print? And people might disagree with what the press says. But we say, look, this is a self-evident good for a free society and a democracy, that there be a free press, freedom of speech, freedom of religion. If you want to take an opinion poll on it, fine, but it's not going to change a thing because it's something that everyone deserves to have. All right, back to Kim Gandy, president of the National Organization for Women.
Much less make our own decisions. And they assault us today with their signs and their elbows and their shoving the same way that they want their legislators to assault our bodies and our lives and our families. But there are some things that are not negotiable. Our right to be free from government interference in our most personal decisions is not negotiable. Our right to use birth control is not negotiable. Our right to determine the spacing of our children and the formation of our families, not negotiable. Our right to make those decisions in private and not to have our records subpoenaed and turned over to attorneys general, the likes of Phil Klein in Missouri or the former Attorney General John Ashcroft. The right for our medical records to be private is not negotiable. The right not to have unwanted pregnancies, the right to use the morning after pill, the right to use emergency contraception, that's a right that is not negotiable. But all of those rights are at risk with one vote. And as we stand here in the shadow of the United States Supreme Court, where Sandra Day O'Connor has spent the last 24 years speaking out and standing up for women's rights, particularly women's rights to reproductive justice. She has announced her retirement, and President Bush has proposed a replacement for her who would oppose us on every one of those grounds. Replacing Sandra Day O'Connor with a no vote on Roe v. Wade is simply not negotiable. We are standing here in sight of the United States Capitol, where this week
On Wednesday, the U.S. Senate will begin a debate on Sam Alito for the Supreme Court. We know that Sam Alito has written that many forms of birth control are abortifacients. If he had his way, we'd be limited to the condom and the rhythm method, which would put some of us at considerable risk.
All right. She goes on like that for a number of minutes and then finally tells them to leave and do not engage the pro-lifers because they don't believe in your right to speak. Just for myself, look, I'm a pro-lifer. I let them speak as long as the clock allowed me to let them speak. I mean, up until 3 minutes before we go off the air. Notice the euphemisms, women's lives, choices, decisions, reproductive rights. And notice what you didn't hear. You didn't hear the old arguments like the fetus is just a lump of tissue. They've abandoned that entirely. You didn't hear life doesn't begin at conception. No arguments about what's going on in the womb. Why? Why are they avoiding the place where abortion actually takes place? Why are they avoiding the place where the instruments reach in and take the child and dismember the child or whatever, however the abortion is performed? Why are they avoiding the place where abortion actually occurs? Why are they talking about the womb? When they say in our privacy, in our bodies, blah, 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 they're talking about the womb. Why is the pro-choice community, who doesn't want the government peering into their private lives, that's how they put it, avoiding the womb? I think it's very simple. Why aren't they arguing that life doesn't begin at conception? Why aren't they arguing that the fetus is simply a lump of tissue? Is it because they've lost that argument scientifically? I don't think so. I don't think that was ever really this cornerstone of the pro-choice argument. In fact, for the last 30 years, the pro-choice argument has been a study in how to avoid this one question. Who is the unborn? Notice in all the comments, that question is never asked, it's never even considered, and it's certainly never answered. Because if you answer that question, who is the unborn, then you're in the womb, then you're dealing with the baby. No, the pro-choice community now, as evidenced by this 33rd celebration, if you want to call it a celebration of Roe v. Wade, is simply to assert the mother's rights over her baby. That's it. Mother's rights over her baby. Period. This is what they're reduced to after 33 years. That's what it was at the very beginning anyway. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our address is 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. You can donate by credit card on our resource line, 1-800-737-0172, 1-800-737-0172. For a free audio copy of this hour of Issues Etc., please visit the audio archive section at KFUO.org. Opinions expressed are not necessarily those of AM850 KFUO. Issues Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.